Chapter 12. The Trust in Man. Scott sat down several meters away. He had no club, no whip, no gun. He sat quietly and made no movement. White Fang's snarl ceased. Then Scott spoke, and at the first sound of his voice, the hair rose on White Fang's neck, and he started snarling again. But Scott made no hostile movement, and went on talking calmly. He talked to White Fang as White Fang had never been talked to before, softly, gently, and soothingly. In spite of himself and all his instincts, White Fang began to trust him. After a long time, Scott got up and went into the cabin. He came back out and sat down in the same place as before. He held out a small piece of meat. White Fang investigated it suspiciously, looking at the same time at the meat and at Scott, ready to leap away at the first sign of hostility. Scott held the meat nearer and nearer to his nose, but White Fang, still suspicious, refused to touch it. In the end, Scott placed the meat on the snow at White Fang's feet. White Fang smelled the meat carefully, but kept his eyes on Scott. Nothing happened. He took the meat in his mouth and swallowed it. Still nothing happened. Then Scott offered him another piece of meat. Again he refused to take it from the hand, and again it was placed in front of him. This was repeated a number of times. Finally, Scott refused to let go of the meat. He kept it in his hand, offering it to White Fang. The meat was good meat, and White Fang was hungry. Very, very cautiously, he approached Scott. At last, he decided to eat the meat from his hand. He never took his eyes from Scott. He ate the meat and nothing happened. Piece by piece, he ate all the meat and still nothing happened. White Fang licked his lips and waited. Scott went on talking. In his voice was kindness, but White Fang had never experienced any kindness from a man. He felt a mixture of satisfaction and warning. Soon, just as he had thought, Scott's hand came towards his head, ready to hurt him. But Scott went on talking in his soft, soothing voice. White Fang was full of conflicting feelings. The hand came nearer and nearer. It touched the ends of his upstanding hair. He shrank down under it. It pressed more closely against him. It was a torment, this hand that touched him and went against all his instincts. The hand repeatedly lifted and descended in a patting, caressing movement. White Fang continued to growl in warning that he would return any hurt he might receive. Scott talked on softly, and the hand caressed him. It was distasteful to White Fang, but it was also pleasant. The hand started to rub his ears, and White Fang's physical pleasure even increased a little, though he was still afraid. "Well, I'll be blowed!" It was Matt coming out of the cabin with a pan of dirty water in his hand, surprised to see Whedon Scott patting White Fang. The moment his voice broke the silence, White Fang leaped back, snarling savagely at him. "If you don't mind me saying so, Mr. Scott, you must be a real fool," said Matt, looking at his employer in disapproval. Whedon Scott smiled and walked over to White Fang. He talked soothingly to him, but not for long, then slowly put his hand on White Fang's head and started patting him again. White Fang allowed him to do so, but kept his eyes fixed suspiciously on Matt. "You may be a top mining expert," said Matt, "but you missed the chance of a lifetime when you were a boy and didn't run off and join a circus." White Fang growled at the sound of Matt's voice, but this time did not leap away from the hand that was caressing him. It was the beginning of the end for White Fang, the end of the old life and the reign of hate. A new and fairer life was about to begin. It required much thinking and endless patience on the part of Whedon Scott. On the part of White Fang, it required a revolution. He had to learn to ignore his instincts and all his past experience. He had to learn what trust was. Over the next few months, White Fang grew to like his master more and more. He had grown up in the company of men, but now he enjoyed it. He did not try to run away from Scott, although he was never tied up. Instead, White Fang became a guard over his master's property. He learned to distinguish between the loud, firm steps of honest visitors and silent, creeping thieves. In the late spring, a great trouble came to White Fang. Without any warning, his master disappeared. White Fang had seen his master pack his bag, but had not understood what that meant. All that night, he waited for his master to return, sitting anxiously on the cold front step of the cabin, waiting. But no master came. White Fang, who had never known illness in his life, became ill. So ill that Matt was finally forced to bring him inside the cabin. He wrote to his employer and told him what had happened to White Fang, and that he feared he was going to die. One night, Matt was startled by a low whine from White Fang, who had got to his feet with his ears pointing towards the door. He was listening intently. A moment later, Matt heard a footstep, the door opened, and Whedon Scott walked in. The two men shook hands. Then Scott looked round the room. "Where's the wolf?" he asked. White Fang stood where he had been lying, near the stove, watching and waiting.
"Holy smoke!" Matt exclaimed. "Look at him wag his tail!"
Whedon Scott crossed the room towards him, calling his name. White Fang came to him quickly. He looked at his master with shining eyes. Whedon Scott crouched down and patted him. He rubbed White Fang's ears and caressed him from the neck to the shoulders. White Fang growled responsively. Suddenly, he pushed his head forward and nudged his way in between his master's arm and body, and there he stayed, hidden from view except for his ears. The two men looked at each other. Scott's eyes were shining. "I always insisted that wolf was a dog. Look at him," he said. With the return of his master, White Fang quickly got better. Having learned to put his head in his master's arms, White Fang was guilty of it often. It was the greatest sign of affection he could give. It went against everything he had learned in the wild. He was putting himself in a position of complete helplessness. It was an expression of total confidence and self-surrender. One night, not long after Scott's return, he and Matt were playing cards before going to bed. Suddenly there was a shout and the sound of snarling outside. They looked at each other as they rose to their feet. "The wolf's caught somebody," Matt said. A wild scream of fear made them hurry.
"Bring a light," Scott shouted as he sprang outside.
Matt followed with a lamp, and by its light they saw a man lying on his back in the snow. He was trying to protect himself from White Fang's teeth. White Fang was in a rage and attacking furiously. The man's sleeves, shirt, and undershirt were ripped in rags, while his arms were terribly slashed and streaming blood. Whedon Scott grabbed White Fang by the throat and dragged him from the man. White Fang struggled and snarled, but made no attempt to bite, and he quickly quietened down at a sharp word from his master. Matt helped the man to his feet. It was Beauty Smith. Beauty Smith looked at White Fang, his face filled with terror. At the same moment, Matt noticed two objects lying in the snow. He held the lamp close to them. They were a steel dog chain and a long club. Whedon Scott saw and nodded. Not a word was spoken. Then he patted White Fang and began talking to him.
"He tried to steal you, did he? And you wouldn't have it. Well, he made a mistake, didn't he?"